Blog Talk Radio.
Like a bird in the sky, this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. Tonight is Tuesday, and it is September 13th, 2016. And tonight's program will continue our analysis of what is a political prisoner, their motives, rewards given, rewards not given. And we want to remind you that an ongoing theme is when we do not demand political payment for our political labor, we are political slaves. And at this point, I'd like to say we have our usual suspects waiting in the wings. I want to give a shout-out to Sister Lynn, Brother Larry, Sister Ann. And, of course, without further ado, I want to acknowledge that Brother Ralph Pointer is in the house.
Thank you so much for that, Sister Betty. What I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Brothers and sisters, and the term brothers and sisters gets more important every day, every moment. And when I say brothers and sisters, I say that to mean the people who have a unity of purpose. And that is purpose is to bring decency, justice, to the lives of all, regardless of race, creed, gender, etc. And when I say bring justice to all, that is with a object of law, like, or an object of justice, like a job. Fair housing, fair wage, a living wage, and above all, an education to help people understand what they must know, what they must do, where they are to have a better life. Now, before we get into our program this evening, I'd like to do what they call a little housekeeping, a little reminiscing of the way it was just a few short years ago, and I'm talking about 2 years and 9 months ago when Lynn Stewart was in jail. And we as a people, with a unity of purpose to free her, were working very hard to bring her home. And one of the arms of struggle was the station WBAI. Through Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen with their Taking Aim program, every week, once a week, I had an opportunity to bring the struggle to the attention of the WBAI listeners. And let me tell you, when I was so appreciative of having this opportunity, I asked Ralph Schoenman what were the limits as to what I have to say, and those of you who know me say that the sky is the limit for me. And Ralph Schoenman said to me, "You have no limits. Speak. You are on my program, Taking Aim." And the BAI program was instrumental, extremely instrumental in bringing Lynn home. Sister Lynn, and Sister Lynn is with us this evening. And so those who are within the sound of this program, get out and vote for the BAI board, the Justice and Unity, and it has to be done by September and by 30th. And go to the WBAI website, and it will tell you the form and the way we want you to vote. Friends of Lynn Stewart and myself and Betty Davis, get your $25 in, and that is for membership, and make sure you get your ballot. And if you don't have a ballot, call 646-535-4059. Get a ballot, because many of our brothers and sisters, and I don't want to say they are left behind, they are still in jail. We have to bring them home. We need your station. We need the help of the people there. And remember, Justice and Unity, the folks that are going to bring BAI back. And without further ado, we'll get on with the program. As Betty has announced, what is a political prisoner? Motives. Remember that word. Motives, rewards, rewards given, and rewards not given. Our brothers and sisters are in jail. We must bring them home. And I'm going to turn the mic over to Betty Davis.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. I want to acknowledge that another political prisoner is in the house who successfully freed himself. I want to acknowledge that there is a sister of a political prisoner who became political in prison, and she is on the air tonight to speak to all of those whose family members are in the death camps, and you are loyally waging a war of liberation to free them. But first, I want to acknowledge a brother who is a contributor and editor of the Black Activist Writers Guild, and he has an incredible update about our Reverend Pinckney. Brother Larry Pinckney, your mic is open.
Thank you, my sister. Much appreciated. Love to you, Sister Betty Davis. Love to you, Sister Lynn Stewart. And, of course, to our stalwart fighter, our stalwart freedom fighter, Brother Ralph Pointer. All power to the people. All power to the people. The struggle continues. Let me just say, first and foremost, I want to echo the words of what both Brother Ralph and Sister Betty have already said. It is imperative, repeat, imperative, that we free our political prisoners, because in so doing, we are freeing ourselves from this mental, economic, social, and political slavery that we are in this country that they call the United States of America. Update with respect to Reverend Edward Pinckney. I received an update about 3 days ago indicating that Reverend Pinckney has been transferred, or as we would say back in the day, I'm a former political prisoner, we don't use the word transferred, we say shipped, because mm-hmm. that's how they deal with us. They treat us like cargo. But anyway, Reverend Pinckney was shipped out or transferred out of Marquette Branch Prison. He's now been shipped to or transferred to the Muskegon Heights, that's MTF prison, also in Michigan. I need to do more research with respect to exactly what that gulag is all about, and I will certainly do so and give you an update with respect to that. But for now, know that Reverend Pinckney is now at West Shoreline Correctional Facility, known as MTF, in Muskegon Heights, Michigan. Okay? Let me move quickly on to something else, because I know there are many people waiting to speak. So let me be succinct. There is also a book that I was informed about today that apparently, not apparently, but has been published. The book is entitled Soldier of Truth, The Trials of Reverend Edward Pinckney. The book is written by Philip A. Bassett. That's B-A-S-S-E-T-T. Philip A. Bassett, Soldier of Truth, The Trials of Reverend Edward Pinckney. I have yet to get my hands on it, but I'm sure as heck glad to know about it, and I would encourage everybody to check it out. I understand that it can be obtained from Amazon.com. So just wanted to give those two updates, to everyone. Want to thank everyone who's on the show tonight. As always, I'm looking forward to hearing from Sister Ann Lamb, who's always got it going on about our political prisoners. I want to remember all of our political prisoners, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. I want to remember Brother Momia. I want to remember Brother Leonard Peltier. I want to remember Seth Hayes. I want to remember so very many others. We must do this. We must free ourselves. Therefore, we must free our political prisoners. Having said that, I said I would be succinct and to the point. I'm going to end and thank all of you who are listening to and or participating in the program this evening of Tuesday, the 13th of September, 2016. Again, I say, all power to the people, all power to the people. Be strong, my brothers and sisters. Be strong, my sisters and brothers. Lynn Stewart came home as a result of the efforts of all of us. This is a collective struggle, and it goes on, and in fact, it intensifies. Thank you again. All power to the people.
All power to the people.
Thank you so much for that. And as I say, when I listen to people on this program, I get goose pimples. Larry, when you said it was a collective struggle, and we brought Lynn home, and she's home with us now. I'm ready to hear that 1,000 more times when we can say we brought them home. It is a collective struggle, but I will not continue. I will let the goose pimples settle and turn it back to Betty Davis.
All right. We are, again, honored to have the sister of one of our persons that was incarcerated in the new slavery. And 574-6628, would you give us a little shout-out tonight and a little update on your successful struggle to free your family member? Your mic is open. 574-6628.
Hello, everyone. I'm glad to be able to, you know, accompany tonight on these issues. I really wanted to reach out and, you know, just my idea is to, you know, just send some support out tonight. I had a brother. His name was James, and he died of a massive heart attack at the end of 2012. At that time, I guess he had been
excuse me, we
you know,
need
dealing
to, if you would like to, can you give us a little ID here? Or, you know, give us your background, your state, et cetera, in addition to discussing your brother?
Well, it's Elkhart, Indiana. Elkhart, Indiana has, you know, been known for placing people in prison for many, many years. This is a city where, you know, you don't predominantly fight the system. You just pretty much, you know, roll with the punches. You plea out. You do whatever you have to do to keep from doing, you know, maybe even 50, 60, 70 years or better. As I was saying, my brother, he was arrested, and he was given a Class A, intent to deliver, a Class B, a handgun violation, and Class C, being a common nuisance in his own home. As I was saying, I had a brother back in 2012 that passed away of a heart attack, and he was actually the one that the police were wanting. Shortly after he passed away, you know, we made the family decision that we didn't want to let his belongings go, so it would be, you know, a smart idea for my younger brother to move in. Well, about 4 months after he moved in, they like I said, they had an investigation on my older brother who had passed away already. But, you know, around here it's kind of like, you know, if they can't get you, they will reach out to your family members. My brother was, you know, just home one day, got a knock at the door saying that they wanted to complete an investigation on my deceased brother. We hadn't really ever heard of, you know, you doing an investigation on a deceased person. So, you know, he went along with the program and, you know, just wanted to assist however he could. So they entered the home without a warrant.
Warrant.
With a warrant. And at that time, you know, we were just told as family who were standing outside who had witnessed this that it was just a old, you know, probation violation. By the time that they had gotten him downtown, he was on a B, and a C, which all carried preferably up to about 73 years. He went to trial. We went through three attorneys. That's another thing, you know, you just can't trust every attorney that you talk to. You know, just because they tell you, you know, yeah, I can help your family doesn't mean that they will. The first attorney that we had, he denied his motion to suppress, which ultimately ended up to everything that we had as, you know, anything to help him was thrown out. So with that, we went and got a second attorney, and she was the trial attorney. I could immediately tell, you know, from the beginning of the trial that it wasn't going to go well. You have one sister of mine that calls in, Valerie Buford. She's actually just a friend within, you know, brothers being incarcerated. I met Valerie the night that my brother was released, and I've been trying to help her through her trials and tribulations. My brother was sentenced to 53 years. I mean, if you have eyes, you can just absolutely see the way that things play out within the system. After being given the 53 years, we had to go back and get an appeals attorney, which additional of the maybe $15,000, $20,000 we had already paid for the first two attorneys, the appeals attorney was another $15,000. By the grace of God, my family wanted to fight. My family did not want to give my brother up because we had just lost a family member, along with many others. We weren't taking no for an answer. And I'm just wanting to talk to everyone today and let them know, you know, you have to have faith, and you have to believe that, you know, that things are going to be turned around. You also actually have to have a lot of support for the family member that's incarcerated. You know, we understand that sometimes they're there by their, not their own means, but actually I sort of turned into an attorney, not ever going to college, overnight. When I seen that my brother was incarcerated, I was not willing to let him go. I started Googling things. For instance, they had my brother for delivery of cocaine, which even in investigations showed that he never was. I went into the computer and I started Googling things like Indiana, reversals, Indiana cocaine reversals, Indiana murder reversals, any type of case that you're in, search for reversals. You cannot, if you ever find, and in reading those, that you find something very close and similar to what your family member or yourself are up against, that would help your attorney a lot. I gave the attorneys so much paperwork that actually his last attorney, the appeals attorney, told me, you actually did this case on your own. You just needed me as a middleman. As of November of 2015, by then my brother had served about 3 years. He was released, walked out, case clear. The only thing I can say is, because I knew that we had a case and because I kept my trust in God and knew that there was no way that I was going to have to visit a prison for the next 50 years, by that happening, I just wasn't taking, as I said, no for an answer. So, you know, with all of that happening and things, I just ended up, you know, talking with this attorney. I befriended him. What I have found is that one thing to really be careful of, if you're talking with an attorney, if you have, you know, a reason to believe and you have some proof that these things aren't true and your attorney is not willing to, you know, bring those things forth to you in court, I would say don't work with them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing that my family did. I wrote up, you know, all kinds of paperwork. I gave her 7 to 10 paper, you know, pieces of paper full
Ralph,
of.
Ralph, may I interrupt and ask this
Yep, sure.
Young lady, what was the basis for the reversal? Finally, was it a bad search? What did the court reverse on?
Well, the basis of the reversal was that, number one, they always use, or pretty much use most of the time, the fact that they were smoking marijuana first, which is what brought them there. Well, my brother did, you know, tell me that earlier that morning, you know, he had a little bit of marijuana and that there was just crumbs on the table. Well, in the trial, they showed a bag of marijuana. So in the midst of 3 years going by, they sort of forget what they ever said. So when they were asked by the appeals, you know, board, how much of marijuana it was, their response was, it was remnants. Remember that remnants is not a bud. It will not carry. It has to be a bud. So
well,
that was
I'm
one
going,
thing that threw
I'm going to interrupt this legal discussion to say that I have heard this 100 times. Why is your story important is because it must be fought the same way. And when you say Elkhart, Indiana, my mind flips to Gary, Indiana, Pittsburgh, PA, Detroit, Chicago, all of these centers where people were running for slavery in the great migration to look for a better way of life. And that takes me back to my introduction. Everything from birth to death is about racism. We are running from slavery, and in this nation, we are enslaved everywhere we go. And Gary...
Let me interject very quickly. This is Larry Pinkney. I just want to say this. First of all, kudos to you, my sister. Kudos to you and your family. All power to the people.
Because you
and your family did not give up. And you have taught an incredible lesson to everybody. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. We do not give up. You said,
Don't give up. I was
not going to be visiting my brother for 50 years. I was going to get him out. And you did that. And you know what? All power to you, sister. All power to the people.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I am so honored. Thank you, my sister. That's really all I have to say. But this is an
I mean, you know, you have people that bring you down. You know, we had people on Facebook. I could tell the way, you know, people looked at me in town, you know, like, they were saying, oh, she's doing too much. You know, she's always on Facebook. She's always writing about her brother's release. She's always talking about her visits. She's always talking about, you know, what the system is doing. But you know what? As I was doing that, there was something that was leading me spiritually. You know what I mean? I don't know if it was that my father had recently passed. I don't know if it was that my brother had passed right after him. And then this incident happened right after that. But it was just like, sometimes there's something that nags at a person that will actually make you fight. Not just to have a part in it, but to actually fight for that person that you want in your life.
We are all driven, and that something has a different name for each of us. And one of the names I have for that being driven is unity of purpose. We are going free all of our people, and you have shown it. And boy, I love hearing that story, but let me tell you, we want to repeat it. Stick with us as we continue, and I'm going to ask Sister Lynn to come in at this point.
Thank you, Ralph, and I agree with the
sisters' rendition of how they fought and how they won. This is what we have to hear. This is what encourages all of us to keep on going. And I just wanted to also go back to something you said earlier. This is about the radio station here in New York, WBAI. The elections are coming up, justice and unity, and it was Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman, but it was also Bernard White. It was also Sally O'Brien, Bob Letterer. All of these people fought to bring me home. They had you on the radio to talk about the case, and that publicity was so valuable. And we cannot lose this radio station. And at this point, it is not looking good. But vote. Vote before the end of the month. Vote justice and unity. I'm going to go on to talk about something a little bit different tonight from what we usually have. Recently, they had an article in the New York Times about how back in the 1950s, NASA had hired these black women, very young, right out of college, super duper brilliant, summa cum laude, Phi Beta Kappas, and they went to work in NASA's American Space Program. It was held then at Langley Air Force Base, and most of them lived in Hampton. These were black women. They worked under Jim Crow. They were separate and not equal, and yet they are the hidden figures of the American Space Program. And they have just written a book, and the book is Hidden Figures, about these women and the work that they did. So while we were all wandering about thinking that the American Space Program was these tall, blonde, buzz-cut astronauts, it was really these black women. And there was another hidden figure. And that hidden figure is now a political prisoner and has been a political prisoner for over 50 years. And I speak of Sundiata Okoli. Did you know that Sundiata graduated from Prairie View in Oklahoma, that he went to work at White Sands as a math genius who also plotted for the original NASA program? He actually told me at one point that he taught Neil Armstrong. Now, you say, well, that's very nice, okay. He was, of course, arrested. If you don't know who Sundiata Okoli is, he was arrested as Clark Squires on the New Jersey Turnpike with our dear Assata Shakur. But how he got to be there is what's fascinating, because he was a hidden figure. He was a black man working in the program that sent the first human being in orbit around the Earth. After they did some chimpanzees, after they did some dogs, they did Alan Shepard, and he had taught Alan Shepard. So I want you to know that although we are spoon-fed the demonization of our political prisoners, including myself, I have seen my recent headlines of a story about me in the Associated Press, and it's called Lawyer Hate. And she continues to go on hating. Well, I don't hate. I hope I'm like Che Guevara, and I am believing that the revolution is about love. But I want to finish Sundiata's story because it's close to me and it shows you who the man is. He had testified in the famous Brinks case in the Southern District, that's the federal court in New York, about his role, and his role was to come in there and talk about being underground. And he had also talked about his background, his math background, his genius background, how he had worked at White Sands. So I had a grandson named Ernesto, interestingly enough, and Ernesto was working on a program about space. And he came to me and he said, I'm looking for information. Where should I go? And I said, you know, I have this friend in jail. And he was part of the space program. I said, you write a letter and I'll mail it to him. And I mailed this letter to my friend Sundiata. And Sundiata wrote back. And he wrote back the most beautiful, detailed letter, hand-printed. He had drawings to show how the astronauts went into orbit, what was necessary, how they had to have so much thrust, the whole thing, but told in the way that my grandson, who was all of, I think, about 10 years old at that time, could understand it and repeat it for his classmates. This is who our political prisoners are. They are people of the people and for the people. They are someone who would take the time to write to a 10-year-old and tell him about being in that space program. but the ending of what he said to Meyer Nestel was the most touching, and it still brings tears to my eyes. Because at the end, Sundiata said, "During the time I was at White Sands, I went on vacation to Harlem, New York," he said, "and I fell in love with the politics of the times." That was the mid-60s, he said, "and I never went back to White Sands." He became a Panther. He became a member of the BLA. He is still in jail. And we really, really must bring him and all the others who have these human stories to tell us. We must repeat their human stories to everyone to understand why they do not belong locked in cages for one day longer. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you so much for that, Lynn. And while we're talking about our political prisoners, we must remember that our political prisoners, our people in jail, are enslaved. They are working for less than slave wages. And they fought for themselves on their own behalf this past week. They are organizing in jail. They are organizing strikes. They are organizing hunger strikes, sit-down strikes, no-work strikes. And we, as being a part of a program working for political prisoners, must become a greater part of their organization. And I know Lynn and all of the people here, we have so much to do.
Yes,
so Rob, little time.
I wanted to comment that many of us do listen to Amy Goodman in the morning. I think she's becoming such a liberal these days, but she reported today on Chelsea Manning's hunger strike.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of this nationwide strike that is going on to make sure that people get a living wage and also that they are able to live in prison given the way they are treated, given the way they are fed. Amy failed to mention that Chelsea was part of this bigger action called by the anarchist Black Cross, a group that has been working with prisoners for years and years successfully, and I think that that should be mentioned. Thanks.
Thank you again, and without further ado, you with us?
I am with you. I heard somebody else saying, Ralph. I don't know who that was.
Yeah, that was me. That was me, Larry Pinkney. Can I just interject for another second? I don't usually do this, but I think it's really important that the sister from Indiana and anyone listening to this program understand something. You know, the sister said, and all power be to her and her family, she said she had faith. And so I'm going to go right with that. And sister, you know, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual as a 10-year
mm-hmm.
political prisoner. All right, but I want to tell you something, sister. Sit down and open your Bible to James chapter 2, verse 26. I repeat, James chapter 2, verse 26. And it says, faith without works is dead. All right? So, all power to the people. I just really wanted to interject that. I'm very excited to hear everyone. And thank you, sister. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Would you repeat that again, Larry? What was that phrase? It was very short, and I missed it.
And that's why I love it, because it's very short and to the point. Open the Bible to the book of James, chapter 2. Verse 26. All right? And it says, very short, succinct, and to the point. Faith without works is dead.
Yeah.
Come on, let's free our political prisoners. Let's show some work.
All right. I like
okay,
that.
Okay, preacher, let's go to Ed.
Okay.
Following that.
Well, we have a lot of upcoming events going on this week around our political prisoners. I'm happy to report. I am getting some poems from Jaleel. I haven't gotten them yet, but next week we should definitely have a poem from Jaleel. He said he wrote three more. Now, this first event is not particularly a political prisoner per se, but he was friends with our political prisoners. That is John McKenzie. John McKenzie, as many of you probably know, committed suicide after being denied parole for the 10th time. He was at Fishkill. And there will be a memorial service for him on Thursday, September 15th, from 3:30 to 5:30 at the National Black Theater, which is 2031 Fifth Avenue, between 125th and 126th. So that will be happening at a very unfortunate time for me, because I'm usually at work at that time. But my daughter would be important for people to know. His daughter, one of his daughters, will be there. So it would be nice if people could come out and show their support for the family. It's a very hard time. You know, so, and as Jaleel said, John McKenzie is our first martyr. All right? Not that we want to have any more, but we do have John. And then Friday is a national day of action for Imam Jamil Al-Amin. I know there's stuff going on in Philly. There's stuff going on in Newark. There's stuff going on in Atlanta. There's stuff going on in California. There's also, of course, an event happening here. So that's going to be at the Adam Clayton Powell Jr. State Office Building. I assume, actually, this is an indoor event. I don't know where inside the State Office Building, but I'm sure we can find out.
Dan, could you keep your voice up? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. On Friday from 6 to 9 at the Adam Clayton Powell Jr. State Office Building, there will be an event for Imam Jamil Al-Amin. It's a National Day of Action for Imam Jamil. So that's going to be 6 to 9 at the A.C. Powell Jr. State Office Building on West 125th Street and A.C. Powell Jr. Boulevard, a cross-generational educational event to both educate the current generation and re-educate the elders regarding the contributions, legacy, and updated condition of this outstanding leader. His transition from H. Rapp Brown, civil rights pioneer, activist, and black power advocate, to Imam Jamil Al-Amin, Muslim leader, community activist, and now political prisoner since the year 2000, must be known and understood within the context of a continuum of struggle. Keynote presentation with film clips by Imam Al-Haj Talib Abdur Rashid from the Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood, guest commentary by former political prisoner Sekou Odinga, and others. This day events are being held throughout the country. This is the official New York event. So that's on Friday. Then on Saturday, we are busy. There is a rally outside Governor Andrew Cuomo's home in Mount Kisco to reform the New York State prison system. This is called Candles for Clemency. And, you know, Cuomo has paid lip service to clemency, but he has only actually granted two clemencies. Jaleel has actually put in a petition for clemency, so it would behoove us. I'm going to have signs for Jaleel and Herman and Seth and Maliki and David Gilbert. And some of the folk from ABC are also coming. So this is on Saturday. It's going to start at 7 p.m., but they do have buses leaving. They say comfortable buses. I like that. Comfortable buses will leave from 10th Avenue between 16th and 17th Streets at 5 p.m. sharp and return after the vigil. Round-trip tickets are $15. We ask those who can help us to defray costs to pay more. Nobody will be turned away for lack of funds. And then there's a little picture of Cuomo there, and it says, Governor Cuomo, get a heart. Issue clemencies now. Stop the warehousing of prisoners. Why must people die in prison? Release aging people in prison. Show mercy. Give people a second chance. Stop playing politics with people's lives. And another way you can get there, there's several ways. The bus, as we said, 10th Avenue between 16th and 17th Street. They'd like people to RSVP, which is at https://clemency.eventbrite.com. By train, you can take the Metro North to Mount Kisco, and then it's about a mile away, so you can just grab a cab. and go to the intersection of Crow Hill Road and Millwood Road. So this should be interesting. I hadn't gone before when they've done this. I think it's important, not just for our political prisoners, but for all prisoners in New York State. So we'll definitely be there. And then on Sunday, we have something that Ralph and Lynn, of course, have participated in before. We have the Freedom Fighters contingent at the African American Day Parade on Sunday, September 18th. So all are invited to come and march with us in the Freedom Fighters contingent. We will assemble at 12 noon on 112th Street at the corner of St. Nicholas Avenue. And we will march up to 136th Street. We always have a good contingent. We'd like it to be bigger and more than what it sometimes is. But, you know, we're out there. We have our prisoners with us. We have our banners. We have our signs. We always get a wonderful, you know, reception from the crowd. We give out lots of literature. So, you know, it's a good event, and it's an important event, and we've been out there every year since 1993. So this is, you know, an annual thing that we always participate in. And I did go yesterday to a wonderful event that was at the IAC with Frantz Fanon's daughter. I can never think of her name properly. She is the head of a UN working group on the rights of people of African descent. Extremely interesting presentation. Of course, Pam Africa, talking about Mumia, Hep C, the power of the people, and so on. And, you know, Pam is always an extremely inspiring speaker. And also Rachel Bolkenstein, who was at one point on Mumia's legal team. There's another case that went up to the Supreme Court where this man is going to get a new trial based on the fact that the prosecutor, and this was also in Pennsylvania, that the prosecutor who had later gone up higher and was then on the Supreme Court did not recuse himself from this case, right? And obviously,
well, and we're going to get into that. But I appreciate that you had mentioned that. Possibly get a new trial. This is what
possibly,
we're working
yes.
for. And I would say that we cannot do a program without talking about what is happening recently at the with the Indian movement out in
the indigenous. We've been part of
and
that.
And one of the things I found out today was that they had planned to go under the Missouri River at another spot.
In Bismarck. They were going to do it in Bismarck.
Would have influenced, might have influenced a white community.
Yes,
and
Bismarck.
So they
actually
moved it to the indigenous community.
Yeah, they were going
to
do it in Bismarck.
Under.
Bismarck, North Dakota. Yeah.
Exactly. And so we see nothing has changed. We must change it, and we must move on again because we have Brother Joel in the wings.
Right.
Joel has a lot of announcements about what's going on with the Eric Garner case. And,
Sister Ann,
we look forward to the poetry next week. We're going to all be looking forward to that. And we thank you so much. We hope the four-legged family members are recovering.
Oh, yes, they are. They're doing very well, and they send their regards as well. They said, we're fine.
Right. I also want to make an announcement that this coming Friday, September 16th at 7 p.m., in Manhattan, New York City, at the Pearl Studios, 500-8th Avenue, again at 7 p.m., you should join Ralph and Lynn. They're going to be dealing with the Socialist Action Panel. And once again, we're going to be trying to bring enlightenment to the public that we cannot allow ourselves to be taken for granted by this so-called two-party system. So please join Ralph Pointer and Lynn Stewart, and I believe Jeff Macker is going to be there, and Joe Lombardo is going to be there, discussing the real contradictions in this so-called two-party system fiasco. Without further ado, however, we want to bring on Brother Joel. We've missed him last week, and I know he's got a lot of insights to share with us before we turn the mic back over to Brother Ralph. Brother Joel, your mic is open.
Yes. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes,
can
you
hear
me loud? Yes,
oh,
sir.
Oh, okay. Well, I went to two events over the weekend. One of them was the Brooklyn contingent of solidarity from the outside with the nationwide prisoner strike. And I know I tuned in a little bit late today, so I don't know if this was covered, but I'd say there were between 200 or 300 people out there in Brooklyn in front of the, I don't know exactly what it's called, sort of like a prison warehouse on 29th Street and 2nd Avenue, the same place as the where the protest was held during the struggle over the island of Vieques, which had been militarily abused with artillery and aircraft bombing, which is part of Puerto Rico, of course. And so anyway, outside of this building, there were about 300 people, and it was called a noise demonstration. And the idea was to raise some noise and protest over the prison system and all the abuses and the slavery underlying it, and to show solidarity with the national prisoner strike, which is addressing all of those things. And it was, I think, very effective. The prisoners inside were able to make their lights go on and off. So every time the noise increased, you'd see all these blinking lights from inside the prison building. And it was, I'm sure it tremendously raised the spirits inside and contributed to some degree to raising morale and the impact and momentum of the nationwide prisoner strike, which I believe is continuing and growing as we speak. And this is a very important thing because it shows how the prisoners can be a central part of not only improving their own conditions, but of awakening a solidarity and a movement inside and outside, ultimately to bring about a revolution to overthrow this whole damn system, which is nothing but a stratified set of layers of being imprisoned. That's what we're... This system is... I'll name it capitalism, imperialism. It is an enslavement system. Anyone who feels that they're free under the system, it's only because they're accepting their own oppression by looking down at others that are even more oppressed. But in reality, we're all pitted against each other, and except for that 1% or maybe 0.1%, all of us are really in a form of enslavement. And in order to free ourselves, we have to create a system where the regular people are in a real democratic republic based on the working people and the people formerly oppressed and other people who contribute to the sustenance of human life rather than a system revolving around immense corporate profits. Now, the other place that I went, there was, as you know, the nationwide prisoner strike was the date that it begins coincides with and is based on the anniversary of Attica, which, again, one of the great struggles of the 20th century, the name of which will live on and on from century to century. And it's one that's close to my heart personally, because at that time I was in prison in Lewisburg Penitentiary, and one of the reverberations of the strike in Attica were a series of a strike wave, and other strikes parallel to and in solidarity with the Attica brothers. And we had one at Lewisburg. It was the longest work stoppage in federal prison history, and a lot of the inspiration for it, beginning and continuing, came from the Attica Rebellion, which is still reverberating now. And the so at any rate, it was a reminiscence of the Attica struggle, which also broke out on the 100th anniversary of the struggle in Wounded Knee. So the drums are still beating, and the struggle is continuing, and we have to really see to it that there's a rededication to these struggles of those who have ended up in the concentration camps of the poor and oppressed, which the prison system are. The prison system supposedly exists to deter crime, but how could it when the biggest criminals are running the country? The biggest criminals are the ones with the keys to the prisons, who operate the prisons in order to protect their privileges, which arise out of the crimes that they commit all around the world, from corporate theft all the way up to genocide. These are all done to enforce a system based on robbery and murder and perjury by the media, which both incites and demonizes the struggle. So we have a system which is, and of course the prisons are the a weapon of the system to deter anyone from breaking the rules that are set by these big criminals upstairs. So the way to fight crime, and I should say, you know, maybe this is a little bit lawyeristic, but you know, what took place in Attica, where prisoners were killed in cold blood by the forces that were sent in, even the prison guards, the so-called hostages, when they went in, all of them were killed by those forces of the state that were sent in to try to crush the strike and the spirit around it. Those people are still living, a lot of them. Rockefeller is dead, the biggest of those criminals, the one who was ultimately on top of that hierarchy. However, all of those, from the lowliest clerks who collaborated in the mass murder, all the way up to the National Guards who pulled the triggers, the torturers, the prison guards who also worked with it, the wardens, the higher-ups in the political structure, all of them are actually guilty of murder. The blood is on their hands.
Thank you for that, Joel. Thank you for that reminder.
One more thing. I just want to say that we need a revolution in order to bring them to justice. There is no statute of limitations on murder.
Okay. Thank you for that, Joel, for reminding us that there are prison uprisings from the inside, people under the most outrageous conditions, the most limiting conditions, are fighting back. We've heard from people on the outside who are constantly fighting back. It can be done. It must be done. And we in New York must remember 1969 in Rikers Island, a successful sit-down strike. We won. We can win again. Bring our political prisoners home. And thank you, brothers and sisters, for listening in. And we hope to have this next week. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Say them clear for the whole.